And here again the great law of attraction operates, for many mortals are in similar conditions of development and evil thoughts to what these evil spirits are, and naturally, these evil spirits are drawn to them and do come to them. And frequently it happens that while visiting these mortals of similar conditions to their own, they attempt to influence mortals who are in a better state of moral and spiritual condition, and sometimes succeed in doing them harm. But the great fact is that these evil spirits have a place of living, where they have to remain, until the Paget Messages 1915, by the operation of the law of compensation they are relieved from some of their evil tendencies and desires, when they are permitted to progress. My principal reason in writing you is to have you know that there are hells of places as well as of conditions, and that these places by reason of what they contain in their appearances add to the suffering of the spirits. As I have written a long time, I will stop, and say that I am a Christian and an inhabitant of the celestial spheres, and one of the spirit band that is helping you in your great work of the Master. So in leaving you I will subscribe myself, your brother in Christ, Swedenborg. December 18, 1915. I am here, Herod. Let me write just a line before you close, as I am anxious to tell you of a matter that may be of importance to you in reference to the descriptions of the hells which you received last night from Swedenborg. He says that the hells are places as well as conditions, and that they have as a part of them certain appearances and surroundings that make the sufferings of the evil spirits increase. Well, this is true. And in addition I wish to say that not only are these appearances and surroundings real and existing to the consciousness of the spirit, but are real as a fact, independent of the consciousness. If there were no spirits in these hells, these appearances and surroundings would exist just the same. So you see, a great many mortals whom I have heard express their opinions to the effect that hell is a mere condition of the recollections of the spirit, and nothing more, are altogether wrong in such opinions, and they will find that the consolation, if any there be, from such opinions will not be found whenever they may become inhabitants of these hells. I have passed through all of them, and know whereof I write, for there is no teacher so efficient and convincing as the teacher called experience. I know that if I had only my recollections and remorse as the cause of my sufferings they would have been much lighter and not so excruciating as they were. No, mortals will not find any consolation in such a hope, for there is no foundation for such hope, and the poor, deceived mortal who bases his ideas of hell on such a hope will be sadly disappointed. When you consider a moment, you will see that there is nothing unreasonable in the facts that I have stated. 281. You and all others who believe in the happiness of the higher spiritual spheres, not to mention the celestial spheres, believe that the happiness of the spirits who inhabit these spheres is increased and made more real by the beautiful surroundings and the fruits and living water that so many spirits have described as being a part of that higher existence. Then why is it not as reasonable to suppose that in the hells there are surroundings and appearances that will make the conditions of spirits whose evil lives have caused them to become inhabitants of these hells of even more unhappiness, and create more suffering and misery? This supposition is one that no reasonable argument can prove to be incorrect. I merely wanted to add what I have said to what Swedenborg wrote, for I know that conviction must come where statements are based upon actual experiences and where knowledge is derived from sufferings which came from the actual existence of things that are sometimes alleged not to exist. I will not write more now, but in closing will say that I have long since left these hells, and am now an inhabitant of higher spheres and a follower of the Blessed Master. When on earth I was known as Herod the King of Judea, and the poor, miserable, mistaken man who thought that by slaying the babes of Bethlehem he would maintain his power as ruler. So good night and God bless you, Herod. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, sweetheart, you have had a letter tonight from a spirit who ought to know what he is writing about, as he was a most wicked man, and, as I have been told, suffered the torments of the lowest hells. But as to you personally, I want to say that it will make no difference to you what the nature of the hells is or whether there be any or not. You will never see them, unless when you come over you have a desire to visit them for the purpose of doing good to some poor unfortunate. And I thank God for this assurance and knowledge. I will not write more tonight. with all my love, I am your own true and loving, Helen. December 19, 1915. I am here, John. I merely want to say that I have listened to the message that you have read, and to the remarks of your friend and yourself, and the Paget messages 1915. I believe that you have a true conception of the truth as to these hells. Swedenborg told you gave you a true description of their conditions as they actually exist, and Herod told you with the certainty of experience what he found to be true, and I, John, who have visited them in the efforts to allay the sufferings of the spirits who inhabit them, tell you that they exist as places, with all the darkness and surroundings that caused the sufferings of the unfortunate spirits to increase. I desire to make this statement so that this question of what hell really is may be settled for all time, so far as you are concerned. I know that many mortals console themselves with the belief that because of certain natural laws, there cannot possibly be any hells such as the Orthodox teach, and that therefore there cannot be any hells at all. But this conclusion drawn from the premise is not correct. The mere fact that because a man or spirit cannot burn eternally and never be consumed, does not justify the inference that such spirit cannot be punished by surroundings which have a fixed locality. No, man must not rest in the belief of there being no such hells as Swedenborg has described, because if they do, they will be woefully mistaken and surprised should they live such lives on earth as will cause them to be placed in these hells. Say this much tonight, as I don't want you to receive any communication which is not in accord with the truth. It is of such vital importance that you receive nothing but the truth that we who are interested in this work have determined that nothing but the truth shall come to you, and that whenever error or misstatements creep in we will carefully correct the same. So without writing more tonight, I will say that I am your brother in Christ, John. December 20, 1915. I am here, Jesus. I came tonight to tell you that you are in a good spiritual condition and that your soul has had a great inflowing of the divine love, and you will realize as time goes by this love to its fullest. I know that you are not so very far from the kingdom, and that soon such love will come to you as will make you a conscious child of the Father and one upon whom he has bestowed his great love in all its purity and splendor. So let your prayer and praise go up to the Father in continuous streams of soul longings and love. And 282, you will know that God is your Father and the One altogether holy. I would like to write to you tonight another of my messages, but I do not think it best, as you are just not in that condition of rapport that will make it as successful as you desire, but soon I will, and you will learn more truths of which you now have no knowledge and of which the world has never heard. For even in my teachings on earth I did not teach the truths that you will receive. Well, I will tell you that love is the greatest thing in all God's universe, and that with its coming into the soul of a man comes peace and happiness and joy, and a knowledge that the Father is a real, existing, present Father of the most wonderful tenderness and love. You are in a condition that you will experience this love to a very great degree, and the Holy Spirit is with you and is filling your soul with this love and making you feel the influence of its presence. Oh, my dear brother, I now know that you will become my own true disciple and worker for the salvation of men, and very soon you will have given to you the great gift of inspirational talking, and you will do much good in your telling mankind of the great love of the Father and his wonderful mercy. This will come to you when your condition is such as to admit its coming, and when your soul is attuned to the heavenly things that are now working to forward the revelations of the great truths. I know just how you feel tonight, and I am with you in all my love and tenderness, and am giving you the great love that I have for the Father and that I have received from the Father. So believe in me and pray to the Father and trust in him to the fullest. For with this trust will come faith that will make all your longings and aspirations things of real substance, as your soul will become a thing of substance in the divine nature of the Father. Well, I will stop now, but I will not leave you without letting you know that you have my love and blessings in all their fullness, and the blessings of the Father. So remember that you are mine and that you are the object of my care and will always be. So good night, your brother spirit, Jesus. December 22, 1915. I desire to write you a short time to inform you of certain truths which you should know pertaining to the spirit life, and to what mortals who lead the Paget Messages 1915, lives of good and pure men may expect and be assured of realizing. I'm in the celestial spheres, but I shall not speak of these spheres, but only of the spiritual spheres, where men after they become disembodied spirits may live and experience a happiness which they on earth have no conception of. When a spirit first enters the spirit world, it receives a welcome from some one or more spirits whose duties are to receive such spirit, and to show the place where it is suited to live or exist. Such spirit is then permitted to meet its friends and relatives and to commune with them for a short or long time and receive whatever consolation such friends or relatives may be able to give it, and in many cases the gladness and happiness of these spirit friends cause the spirit to believe that it is in heaven, or at least, in a place of great happiness. But after this first interview, the spirit must, by reason of the law of attraction, go to the place where its condition of soul or its condition of moral growth or intellectual development fits it for, and there remain until such condition is made better and enables it to rise to a higher place. No spirit, after it once gets into the place that is suited for it to live in, ever retrogrades, although it may stand still for a long number of years, and never make any progress. But this is a truth not known to a great many mortals, and spirits also, that the condition of the mortal at the time he becomes a spirit fixes his condition and place of living when he first enters the spirit world. After he is put in such place by the law of attraction as I have said, and when once that place is found and occupied, the spirit never goes to a lower place, but either will stay in that place for a long time, or will progress, and ultimately will in all cases progress. Well, the evil spirits find these places of habitation in the earth planes, which are many, and of varied kinds, having many different appearances, suited to the conditions of the spirits who will occupy them. A spirit who is in the lowest of these earth planes is said to be in the lowest hells, as all spirits who are in these planes where they suffer and encounter darkness believe and say they are in hell. But this is merely a name used for convenience, for the hells are merely places forming a part of the one great universe of God. These hells, as you may imagine, are very numerous, for the conditions of spirits are very varied, and each spirit has a place in which to live fitted to its condition. As the spirit becomes freed from some of these conditions, which as to them causes the law of attraction to work, he progresses to a higher and better place, and finds that his surroundings are not so dark and painful. And as this progression continues, such spirit will ultimately find himself in the planes of light and comparative happiness, where the evil recollections have to a large extent left him, and the good deeds which he did on earth then come to him and cause a happiness that makes him realize that he was not all bad, and that God has been good to him in relieving him from the sins and evil thoughts which bound him to the place from which he has progressed. But after all this, he has not gotten into any of the spheres which are above the earth planes, and he may have to remain there for a great many years before he enters the second sphere which is next in gradation to the earth plane. This latter plane is the most populous of all the spheres, for it has spirits coming to it in great numbers, in greater numbers than are progressing from it to higher spheres, and hence it has a greater variety of sub-planes than has any of the other spheres, and is filled with a greater variety and kind of spirits than are any of these higher spheres. When a spirit has remained in the earth planes a sufficient length of time to put him in condition to go to the next higher sphere, he makes his progress, and is never prevented from doing so. I do not mean to say that the spirit is compelled to remain in the earth planes any particular number of years before progressing, for this is not true. On the contrary, the number of years that he remains there is determined by his condition of progress, so that some spirits may go through these planes in less than a year and others may remain there many years. In the second sphere, appearances are brighter and many opportunities are afforded the spirit to seek for and obtain happiness that he did not have before, and many spirits find great happiness in pursuing their intellectual studies and things of this kind, and in obtaining a knowledge of the laws of the spirit world governing what you might call the material nature of this world and also of the earth world. This sphere is not so well suited for the growth of the soul faculties, and those spirits whose desires and aspirations are for the development of their soul qualities do not stay in this world or sphere very long, for they do not find that the necessary provisions for such development exists, and as a consequence, they progress to the third sphere. 283, the Paget Messages 1915, where they find wonderful opportunities and surroundings, which enables them to progress in these matters of the soul. Well, I see that you are tired, and I will postpone any further writing on these matters to another time. So good night, John B. Cummies. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Oh my dear, how I wish that you could see me as I am now and the great love that is in my soul, then you would never doubt me. Well, my garment is a beautiful, white flowing gown which has all the splendor of the sun shining on the polished silver roof of some Turkish mosque. I am dressed all in white and have a golden girdle, and jewels, as you would say, on my head, and an aura that shows the condition of my soul development. My form is very beautiful, the spirits tell me, and my features are very classical and mobile also. But wait until you come over and you will see, and if you can't wait, ask your friend Judge Sirik, who is here, what he thinks of my appearance. So sweetheart, I will say good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. I am here, Judge Sirik. Well, Paget, I heard what your wife said, and I would like to tell you what her appearance is, but I have not words to describe it. She is a beauty that you have never had the faintest conception or, notwithstanding what has been written you and your vision also. But I tell you this, that she has a form of the greatest perfection, and countenance, which you have never seen the shadow of on earth, and hence, I can't give you any idea of it. But her garments are all shining white, with a brilliancy that dazzles us, who look upon her and her face. Oh, what a beautiful face! I want soon to come and write you a long letter. So I will say with my best wishes. Good night, your friend, Frank D. Sirik. I am here, your grandmother. I come because I see that you have been much interested in the description of the various spheres of the spirit world as contained in the book that you have just been reading. Well, my son, I have read the book as you did, and I must say that I have grave doubts that any mortal ever had the experience of the doctor as is 284, related in that book. I, of course, will not positively say that he did not leave his body and visit some of the spheres of the spirit world, an attempt to give a description of what he saw, but I do not think it was possible for him to visit any sphere which is higher than his soul development would enable him to enter, and, as I am informed, not being a man with the soul development that would fit him for the higher soul spheres, I do not understand how he could possibly have entered a sphere higher than the sixth, and I doubt that he entered that, for from all the information that I have received, I have never heard of any mortal entering a sphere higher than the third, which Saint Paul says he visited. At any rate, the descriptions of the higher spheres as contained in the book, and I mean by this the sphere above the third, are not correct in many particulars for, as I have told you before, the fifth and seventh spheres are not intellectual spheres in the preeminent sense, and in them are not the great colleges and institutions of learning that the book refers to, and neither are the inhabitants engaged in any special study of the laws of nature with the mere intellect. For in these spheres the great studies and aspiration of the spirits are given to the development of the soul by obtaining the divine love, and to help in the work are teachers who devote themselves to instructing these spirits in those things which will lead to this soul development. The mind or mere intellect is not given much attention to, but is subordinated to the soul development. For with this development and a part of it, comes a wonderful development of the faculties of what you might call the mind, but which we call and which really are the soul perceptions. I know it is hard for you to understand, but what we call the soul perceptions may be compared to the mental faculties as you commonly speak of them. These soul perceptions do not depend upon these mental faculties, and in fact the latter forms no part of the former, but they are entirely distinct and of a different order and composition from these mental faculties. These soul perceptions, as such, cannot be cultivated or made to increase in their powers or qualities by mere study, but they and their progress are entirely dependent upon and not separated from the development of the soul and love, I mean the divine love of the Father. In other words, unless there is a development of the soul by this divine love, there will be no development of the soul perceptions. It is difficult to explain this to you, but, the Paget Messages 1915, you may possibly get some idea from what I have said. The sixth sphere, as I have before said, is the great intellectual sphere, and in this are wonderful colleges and institutions of learning, and many spirits who are great men intellectually on earth are teachers in these institutions. But you must not think that because certain spheres are preeminently intellectual, that there are not teachers of the higher truths pertaining to the souls and to the divine love, working in these spheres, for there are. And many great spirits of the celestial spheres are engaged in this teaching. But this I must say, that the work is more difficult and the effort to convince these spirits of highly developed intellectuality and knowledge is more strenuous than in any of the lower spheres. These bright-minded spirits seem to think that the mind is the great thing to be cultivated and looked after, and while they in a way worship God, yet it is with the faculties of the mind merely. They do not think that there is any teaching in the truth of the new birth and the divine love of the Father, in contradistinction to the love which they possess, which is only the natural love. I have been in all these spheres and have worked in them, and what I tell you I know from actual experience. Well, he is mistaken, for in the seventh sphere the spirits have homes just as they do in the lower spheres, only they are much more beautiful and bring more happiness and gladness because of the great number of additional things that are provided by the Father to increase the happiness of his children. As to our clothing in that sphere, we are clothed in what you would say a modest and comfortable way. Our clothing is not so flimsy as to permit our forms to be seen as if we had on no clothing at all. This idea must have arisen from the fact that inhabitants of that sphere have no thought of immodesty or of what might result from the suggestions that a naked or half-clothed body might give to mortals or even some of the lower spirits. But such an idea does not enter into the question of the nature of the clothes that we shall wear. Our thoughts are all pure and free from mortal taint, and the character of our thoughts has no influence upon the character of our clothing. We wear clothes to cover our bodies because we think it proper to do so, and because we make our clothes by our own thoughts and will, and they are of the most glorious and shining appearances that you can imagine. 285. But as all things in nature have a covering, so in the spirit world, the spirits all have coverings, and this is even so in the celestial sphere in which I live. I have never seen such a thing as a naked or nearly naked spirit in these higher spheres. Of course, the spirit of Dr. Underscore may have entered some of these higher spheres, as I have said, but his information as the author of the book that was communicated to his mortal friend, was not correctly transmitted, for many things which he says are not true. I would like to write more tonight but it is late, and you are tired. I will say with all my love, good night. Your own loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. December 25, 1915. I am here, Jesus. I come tonight, because I see that you are lonesome and feel the need of companionship, and I come to you as a brother and friend to cheer you and make you feel that though you have no mortal friend with you, yet you have a friend in the spirit who is closer than a mortal brother and who loves you with a deep and abiding love. Today has been one in which the people of your land have celebrated what they suppose is my birthday, and have also worshipped me as one of the triune Godhead, as they believe. But as I have told you before, such worship is all wrong and is very distasteful to me, and only makes me the more anxious and determined that this great falsehood shall be exposed and not believed in any longer. There is only one God and that is the Father, and he alone, must be worshipped, for he alone can save mortals from the result of their sins and from the consequences of the great fall of the first parents. I do not want men to look upon me as anything more than an elder brother who is filled with the divine love of the Father, and very close to him in the qualities of love and faith. I am a spirit who is possessed of a knowledge of the attributes of the Father, that no other spirit is, and yet am only one of his children as you and the rest of mankind are, and for my own brothers to worship me as God makes me very unhappy, seeing that they can have such a little knowledge of the truths of the Father. Tomorrow this worship and praise will be continued and I must look upon it with all the distaste that I have, and realize that I am not able to set men aright in their beliefs and worship. Oh, I tell you, the harvest is ripe and the laborers are few. The Paget Messages 1915. But very soon, I hope this truth of the oneness of God, and the brotherhood of myself with all humanity may be revealed to mankind through the messages that you may receive and transmit to men. The one great truth that is the foundation of man's salvation is the new birth, and the fact that the divine love of the Father is waiting for every man to let it enter his soul and make him atone with the Father. I am with you very often and am trying to impress you with the great necessity of having these truths revealed, as men's souls are longing for the truth, and their intellects are dissatisfied with the present teachings of theology, and the sayings of the Bible in many places. While this is to be deplored, yet the time will come when the light that I came into the world to disclose, will shine for every man who may come within the reach of my teachings. Last night, I was reading, as you read, an article, which advocated the eliminating from the Christian teachings of a large part of the New and nearly the whole of the Old Testament, and the formulating of a faith based entirely on my sayings and the writings of some of the Bible writers. Such a plan is one that should be investigated by the thinking Christians of the present day, and in a modified way adopted. The only difficulty in carrying out this plan effectively and having it produce the results desired, is that the Bible does not contain many sayings of mine disclosing the truths, and does contain many sayings attributed to me which I never said. Take that saying over which a controversy is now being had, and which is referred to in another article contained in the book mentioned, that is, that I said, I came not to bring peace to the world, but rather a sword. Now, while it appears in Matthew's Gospel as coming from me, I never said it nor used any expression that would convey the meaning that some of the commentators are endeavoring to place upon the words. I never taught war upon a man's neighbors, and never at any time was such a thought a part of my teachings to the disciples or to any others. No, militarism is all wrong, and against all the precepts of truth, and it should not, for a moment, be believed by any Christian or by anyone else that such action was ever advocated by me. While the truth will cause a division, as I know, among men as to what the truth is, and may even 286, separate and cause bitter thoughts and even hatred to arise in the souls of men towards their fellow men, and even brother may come to dislike brother, yet the accomplishing of such results was not the object of my coming to earth and teaching the truths, but rather are they results of the unavoidable conflict between truth and error. Truth cannot compromise even for the sake of peace, and error will not submit or acknowledge its untruth so long as it can get any mortal to believe in and advocate it. And because of the great gift of free will to man, truth itself, with all the power and knowledge of the further back of it, will not compel a man to accept it against his will. And hence, as man is very fallible and thinks and believes according as his finite mental faculties convince him that a certain thing is or is not true, he will not be willing to surrender his convictions until the truth shall come to him in such a way as to persuade him of its reality. And as men differ so much in the operations of their minds and reasoning faculties, there will necessarily be a great division among them as to what is and what is not true. And hence there will arise disputes and hatred and even wars among them in maintaining their respective beliefs and opinions as to what is truth. While these feelings of discord must necessarily follow the advent of truth, yet I did not come for the purpose of bringing a sword, but for the purpose of showing men what the truths are, and of causing harmony and belief in these truths. Never is hatred, nor discord nor war among men justified, no matter what the cause, and if men will only learn the truth, there will never exist such feelings or acts. Truth is of itself, a thing apart, and admits of no variations or modifications, and, hence, the minds of men must submit to and embrace truth. It will never accommodate itself to the beliefs of men. One is fixed and unchangeable, and the other is always changeable, and until founded on a knowledge of the truth, will at some time or other have to change, because in the end truth will be established in the hearts and minds of men, so that harmony and peace shall reign in all God's universe. Error does not exist in the world because God created it or permits it to exist, but solely because there belongs to man an unrestricted will, which controls and influences his thoughts and acts, and which in turn is influenced by the desires and appetites of the mortal. The Paget Messages 1915. I know it is said that if God did not permit evil and carnal thoughts and desires to exist in the world, there would be no reason or possibility for man to exercise his will in a way that would bring him to all these feelings of hatred, etc., that I speak of.